We shouldn't be scared to go out and have a little fun, but that's the society we live in now. Prayers to everyone and families that have been involved up in hashtag Thousand Oaks.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. We're going to be recapping a Thursday in the NBA with some blowouts, some big comebacks as well, looking at injury news and then previewing a seven-game Friday. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
We will start with the
monstrous line of the night.
Yes, let's go into it. And it is, of course, Kyrie Irving of the Boston Celtics. Kyrie put in a big performance, especially a big second half, as the Celtics roared home to get the victory in overtime. 39 points with 6 triples, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals and a block. He was efficient, going 13 of 28 from the field and a perfect 7 of 7 from the line. A lot of people panicked with Kyrie at the start. I had some people telling him, no, mate, his knee's cooked, he's finished, he can't get back. And I didn't think it was really a knee issue that was causing that slow start. He looks completely fine now, 43 minutes in this game as he dragged the Celtics back in what was looking like a pretty horrible loss to get the victory. He is currently the 17th ranked player this season, and over the last 2 weeks, he is the number one fantasy player, averaging 25, 5, and 5, shooting 54%, hitting 4 threes, blocking a shot, having 1.5 steals, and going at 95% from the line. So some really elite numbers from Kyrie. We always do have to worry about injuries, but he's fairly firmly entrenched as a top 25, or at the very, very worst, top 30 guy for the rest of this season. He is really, really good and putting up some big numbers. Just a quick note, it does appear that he will miss Friday's game. I think it's his grandfather's funeral. He said that last week. We haven't really had an update on it since he said, I'm going to miss the game Friday in Utah, and that's obviously coming up tomorrow. So Kyrie's unlikely to play on Friday, and with 7 games on, you may be able to stream in Terry Rozier or Marcus Smart or even both of those guys for some value. So, you know, Kyrie unlikely to play on Friday, but still putting up some pretty nice performances at the moment.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night goes to Tony Warren Jr. of the Phoenix Suns. TJ went back to the starting lineup. He was starting, hurt his back, lost the starting job, came back off the bench and struggled a little bit. But right back in here, played 42 minutes, had 29 and 7 with 3 triples, an assist, a steal and a block. Kokoschkov refuses to name him the permanent starting forward and goes, oh, it's all about matchups. And yeah, I agree, the matchup of Ryan Anderson against an NBA caliber team is probably not a good one. So therefore, if you're going by matchups, then Warren should start every game. But this one in particular against the Celtics, it would have really killed Ryan Anderson out there with that starting group, given how the way that the Celtics play their wings. Warren needs to be starting every game here. There's absolutely zero point to having Ryan Anderson out there, I don't think, especially now that TJ is not only taking but making threes. Now that is going to come down. He's hitting 50% of his triples this season on 3 attempts per game, averaging 15 and 4 with a 48-89 percentage split. That still leaves him outside the top 100, but it's only in 25 minutes per game, which I do think is going to increase. He's not the most fantasy-friendly player, TJ, because he just doesn't do much apart from score and do it with pretty high efficiency. Aside from that, he doesn't do a huge amount else, but I still think that you want to be grabbing him for 12-team leagues and adding him onto your squad, and hoping that, and it does appear that at least the attempts from 3-point range are going to keep up. He's hitting them at a strong rate, which will drop off, but those attempts are there. In the end, if it goes back to 33% from 3, it might end up hurting his overall value because it will drop his field goal percentage down, one of his real strong points. But for now, he's a guy that you add in 12-team leagues. Probably in 10, I'd be a little bit more cautious, and I wouldn't be labeling him a must-grab guy. But he is that guy that you add in 12-team formats, and I don't think you have too much of a concern about doing that. Your deep leaguer of the night is also your
young gun of the night.
And it is Terry Ferguson of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I shit on Ferguson yesterday saying he's someone who does the absolute least with the most minutes in the NBA, along with his teammate Patrick Patterson. He listened to the podcast, I guess, from his time here in Australia. 30 minutes per game, 14 points. Not per game, 30 minutes in this game. 14 points, 4 triples, 4 rebounds, and a steal and a block, 5 of 10 from the field. This level of usage, 18%, is not something that's usual, but I guess we can chalk some of that up to Russell Westbrook not being there. The shooting level also is not sustainable for Ferguson, who just with this performance crept inside the top 300 despite being a starter and getting 21 minutes a night, averaging 4 points. So he has shot the ball well lately, I'll give him credit. The last 7 games, he's going at 52% from the field, which is including a staggering 78% from two-point range. I don't think he is a high upside long-term guy. I don't think he should be rostered in anything outside of 30-team formats for this season, but it's a nice little performance from Terry Ferguson here to show that, yeah, he can do something. It's his first double-digit scoring game for the season. It's his second multiple three-pointer game. He had a 3 triples game against the Wizards 4 games ago, and he just does nothing, and this is one of those fluky performances that just happens sometimes in the NBA. The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on both Twitter and Instagram. Our account is the same, Locked On NBA Net on both Twitter and Instagram. And on Twitter, you'll get a feed of all of the hosts across the network tweeting out news, lineup decisions, injury information, recaps, summaries, all that sort of stuff. So that's a great account to go and follow. You must follow that one. Even turn on your notifications if you want to get the breaking news. And then on Instagram, Locked On NBA Net is giving you the biggest stories in just 1 minute through Instagram stories, as well as longer stories in our regular feed. So go follow us both on Twitter and on Instagram at LockedOnNBAnet. Let's move on now to the last award of the day. I tell a man's not hot. It can't go to anybody else apart from Carmelo Anthony, who staggeringly is still rostered in 76% of Yahoo leagues. Absolutely staggering. For those of you who want to argue with me revenge games, write this one down. Just write it down. And whenever you bring up a revenge game, we'll just bring this one up. As he played against his former team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, Melo played 20 minutes and had 2 points with 5 rebounds, 0 threes, 0 assists, 0 steals, 0 blocks, 1 of 11 from the field, and didn't get to the line at all. He is the 165th ranked player, and some of that is actually buoyed by those couple of big performances he had when Jim Harden was out. And Harden's back. Eric Gordon was still out of this one. When Gordon comes back in, the increased play of the Comet, Gary Clark, Jim Ennis, Melo's just not going to do it. He might struggle to actually be a top 200 guy this season. He's shooting 41% from the field and 33% from three, which is almost the same as what he did last season. Now, one thing, and I will give him, I guess, some leeway here, is his free throws are way off. 68%. He was a 77 guy last season, 83 the year before that. Or maybe he has just completely lost the plot and just doesn't know how to shoot anymore, which is far from being a crazy talk type of statement, because he just looks terrible. He can't defend. The team is significantly worse with him on the court. He can't shoot. If his name wasn't Carmelo Anthony and he wasn't a surefire Hall of Famer, he would not be a rotation player in the NBA, especially not on a team who has lofty goals for conference finals. He is not a rotation player. He shouldn't be a rotation player on this Rockets team, and he continues to hurt them when he's out there. He's hurting you if you have him in a 10-team league, a 12-team league, and a 14-team league, and I think he can be cut in pretty much all of those ones. The plus-minus goats of the night, the best net rating of the day.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yeah, it is. Al-Farouq Aminu had the best net rating of the day, plus 115.1, as the Blazers got the big victory over the LA Clippers, while the worst net rating went to Yunus Yurepko of the Golden State Warriors, as they got their asses absolutely kicked by the Milwaukee Bucks, negative 93.9. For Yunus, whose shooting did tail off, had been red hot to start the season. As for Aminu, we know what he is. We know that sometimes he's maybe good and sometimes he's maybe shit. Today was a good one from Aminu. Not Aminu. Aminu, and a guy that has that, you know, really fringe 12-team type value. Let's look at injuries. Only real injury news we need to talk about today is George Hill, the news came out that he will miss 2 weeks with that shoulder separation, meaning that Padawan Colin Sexton is going to start he's going to play big minutes and he's likely going to be inefficient as we've seen. But if you want to just try and try something over the next few weeks, then adding Sexton would make a degree of sense for your fantasy team, even in 12 team leagues, even though I'm not the highest on what Sexton can bring. The other injury of note, of course, is Steph Curry, who had to leave the Warriors game against the Milwaukee Bucks, suffering an abductor strain, so basically a groin/hip type strain. He potentially is getting an MRI on Friday. That hasn't been 100% confirmed. Steve Kerr said he might be getting an MRI. So I think we're in a real risk here of Steph missing. If I had to guess, I would say 2 weeks, but that is a complete guess. So a guy that you want to go and look at, especially with Sean Livingston out, is Quinn Cook. He becomes a must roster guy. We saw that last season when Steph was out. Now, albeit some of that was without Kevin Durant as well. But at the moment, we've got Draymond Green out, and the news on Draymond is he's likely to miss Saturday's game as well and return on Monday. So you're going to get an opportunity for a big Durant game and big Clay game, but Quinn Cook is also going to have to step up. There's not that many guards on this team. Jacob Evans probably comes into the rotation, but Cook is the guy we want to look at. Now, hopefully Steph's injury is not severe, but my initial guess, based on what happened and the words coming out, is probably looking at a two-weeker. Again, just complete speculation at this point, which isn't going to be great for this Warriors team, who did get absolutely smacked today. He is the guy that makes this team go. And if you haven't got him and you haven't got Draymond, it's going to make for a really interesting game on Saturday, which I imagine both of those guys won't be there. And it looks like Draymond is going to be out for that game. If you have a company and want to find a new way to reach potential clients, you could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on podcasts. Our demographic is 98% male, higher educated and higher earning than your traditional media audience. So to get your company to sponsor this podcast, email me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Shout out to Zach, who reached out to me a couple of weeks ago with his company. We'll start running some ads for him very, very shortly. Looking forward to trying your stuff out, Zach. We'll see how that goes. But if you're looking to get your company on here, you know where to hit me up. Let's move on to the games now. There were four of them on Thursday, so let's break those ones down. It was pretty blowout heavy, the action on Thursday. The first one of those games was the Houston Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. ESPN's box score was wrong, and that's what the graphic I've got here. They'd lost 98-80, the Thunder getting the victory there. Chris Paul is dealing with an elbow issue. He had ice on it after the game. He's wearing like a sleeve, and he can't shoot at the moment. 10 points with 6 steals and 5 assists. He is struggling with that elbow, so it is something to bear in mind. Capella, the minutes are way up this season, and I don't think it's changing. Yes, Nene is out, but Capella is clearly a superior player to what Nene is. 17-7 for Clint there with a steal and a block, and that's great for his value. Harden had 19-8-5. And the Comet, Gary Clark, another 27 minutes. It wasn't the most productive night for Clark. 3 points with 4 rebounds and a block, but in deeper leagues, apparently he is available now on ESPN as well, so you can go and add him there, 18 team leagues. Clark is a part of the rotation. Gerald Green was pretty poor in this one as well. And PJ Tucker, he's more of that 14-team league guy, I think, 13 points with 3 triples. On the Thunder, Paul George, the shooting is not there for him this season, but still, this is a great line from Georgie. 20-11 with 6 assists and 6 steals. It was 21 attempts and 33% and 60% from the line. So it did hurt you in those areas, but taking up that slack without Russell Westbrook around, he is the 16th ranked player this season, the 10th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, and this is all while shooting under 40% from the field, under 80% from the line, and under 33% from three. So he has got a massive, massive scope to actually improve from where he is, and he is a mid-second round guy at this point, and he could very easily push into that top 12 discussion when those percentages start to come around, which they haven't at this point. But again, we are very early on in the process of this season and seeing how that is all going down. Dennis Schroeder replaced Russell Westbrook. He had 14-6-5. He's got strong value, obviously, while Westbrook's out. Solid-ish value when Westbrook is back playing some of that shooting guard. He might play 28. He might play 25. That's where your element of risk is with Schroeder in those situations when Westbrook's back. But for now, you add him in and you just figure it out later. While another solid Jeremy Grant game. Nothing spectacular, and I don't think he's ever going to really provide us with anything spectacular. 11-6. hit all four of his free throws, 3 of 5 from the field. He is cemented in the starting lineup. He's going to be playing pretty decent minutes moving forward. But in terms of upside, there just isn't a huge amount there for him. He is the 133rd ranked guy this season, but over the last 2 weeks, he's cranked that up to 91st. But those numbers for the season, 11-5 with a steal and a block and 46%, that feels about right for what he's going to do. So he's not a must roster 12-team guy. He is a maybe guy, a guy that you'd look to stream in, you add him in, and some of that value can work in certain situations, but is his upside actually high enough to consider him a potential top 100 guy moving forward? I'm not quite sure that he is there at that area. Yeah, just at this point, old Jez. Nerlens Noel, the defense is just rolling in for him. Another 3 blocks in this game. He is like Muhammad Bamba, just that defensive stats specialist type of a player, not a 12-team fixture by any stretch of the imagination. Let's go on to the next game now. Another what was looking like a blowout, and the Celtics came back. They were down 26 points at one point in this game. They ended up winning in overtime, 116-109. Jason Tatum's shit season continued. 30 minutes, 4 points. Didn't have a single stat at all in the first half. 8 rebounds and a steal, 1 of 7 from the field for Tatum, and he is barely clinging on to top 100 value. Over the last 2 weeks, he's the 142nd ranked guy. The shooting is well down, 39% on the season, including 34% from 3, and the 3-point is down at 42%. I'm not going to bang on about it all the time, but the shooting from last season was unsustainable, and he doesn't do enough in all those other areas to make him this elite-type prospect. He was significantly overdrafted heading into this season, but now he's turning into a buy-low type of a guy. If people are looking at this and being frustrated, which rightfully so, then you try and acquire him back, not thinking he's going to be a top 50 guy, but looking at him as a top 70 sort of a player and hoping that you get some level of that some level of that efficiency from last season back, and he gets a bit more confidence because he isn't playing well. I always thought there was some of the talk about him last season was a little bit overrated, and it was going to be hard for him this season to really replicate that. And we're seeing that play out, but I didn't think it was going to be coming to this sort of a level of piss poor performance. Marcus Smart started in place of Tatum in the second half. 7-4, while Rozier had 10-6, and both these guys are probably going to get a boost for Friday with Kyrie out. A nice 17-pointer from Jaylen Brown. Poor free throw shooting again. This is just going to be something we have to rely upon. Well, actually can't rely upon to be good. It's just going to be piss poor most of the time. And Gordon Hayward, 25 minutes again, just bang on. 8-4-2. It's frustrating. He still has to be held. Not necessarily in a swaddling, comforting type of way, but you have to keep him on your roster. I'd be looking to buy really low, sending my worst player out to try and get him. The good news is he will be playing the back-to-back Thursday, Friday, the first back-to-back of the season. I don't know how much of that is because he just wants to play against Utah, but he could very easily have sat out this game against Phoenix if he wasn't ready to play back-to-back, so that's a positive sign. And then eventually, I think by the time we get to December, the minutes will be back up. For the Suns, Devin Booker loves playing Boston, apparently. 38 with 9 assists and 3 steals. Just huge minutes for the starters here. All of them, apart from DeAndre Ayton, went over 40 minutes. I don't understand Isaiah Kanan at all playing 42 minutes. He is not good. He has zero upside. 7-5-6 with 2 steals for Kanan. A great story to have him back in the NBA after breaking his leg in a Gordon Hayward, Paul George type of manner. He just isn't good. Now, I know that D'Anthony Melton isn't good. I know that Ali Okobo isn't good. But I also know that this team isn't good. And Kanan has no ability to set players up as a point guard. Just go with Devin Booker full-time or get one of the blokes with actual upside to get in there and help out. He can't get anything going. He is the 173rd ranked guy this season, despite averaging 29 minutes per game. And that's obviously a worry, or it's a concern. He's not doing enough, and he's more of that 16-team league guy. And I would have to think, and he has to lose minutes at some point this season. He shouldn't be able to stick at this level of production moving forward, or this level of playing time, because he just isn't good enough, and there's no real reason for him to be doing it. Unfortunately for him, we just need Kokoschkov to make that call. He's already excised Josh Jackson from the lineup, and let's see if he will move and do that with Kanan at some point. Speaking of Jackson, 5 minutes for him. Yeah, he's cooked. Mikal Bridges, 13 minutes, and Ali Okobo, 11 minutes. It's a little bit disappointing in that minutes allocation, while Ryan Anderson got 15 minutes. I'm still thinking that Bridges can be a 12-team league guy, but if you want to drop him to grab Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, if you want to drop him to grab Terry Rozier to stream for tomorrow, if you want to drop him to grab Quinny Cook, that should be a pretty easy decision for you. I do believe in Bridges as a nice, someone said, you know, a Chris Middleton type of player without the, you know, high usage scoring, that, well, Bridges can maybe can develop into that sort of a guy at some point. But for now, we're looking at a guy who's on the periphery of stuff and needs those minutes to push up. Ayton had 14 and 10, just didn't get anywhere near enough touches, and some of that is on Kanan. I just don't think that he is really good enough to be playing in this role as the starting point guard on this team. Just doesn't really make a huge amount of sense, especially with the minutes that have increased for him recently. I'm not a fan of that. Let's go on to the next one. We're looking at the LA Clippers and the Portland Trailblazers. No Marcin Gortat, so it's Boban and Montrezl Harrell. The table had 19 and 6 with a steal and 3 blocks. You know that he is a must-add player in 12-team leagues. The Rooster had 20 and Toby Harris battling through an illness had 15 and 11. The big news here is, though, that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander started, and while that might not seem like big news because he started last game and Avery Bradley was out, and Bradley was out in this one, but Doc Rivers said before the game, we were going to start Shai anyway, even if Bradley was back. He's been playing fantastically, and we want to change things up, and we want him to start. This is something that I mentioned before, that I thought that once Beverly or Bradley got injured and Shai took that starting job, they wouldn't go away from it, and that is apparently what Doc Rivers is doing, and he would have made that change even if there wasn't an injury. So Shai showed what he can do here. 19 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 block. I'm big on adding him in 12-team leagues. It might not work out. There'll be some rocky roads, no doubt about that, because rookies, guards, inconsistency is a pretty common theme with these guys, but you got to add him. You just have to add him, and you have to see where this goes from here. I think he can be a top 100 guy. If they push him to 32 or 33 minutes per night, then he can go, yeah, into the top 100, but he's that guy that the opportunity's there. We love what he's doing on the court, so you've got to just take that chance, go and make the grab, and you hope it works out. And if it doesn't, then you move on to the next guy. But I do think that Shai is a guy that we do need to go and grab. Boban only played 12 minutes. He was being manhandled a little. Not manhandled. He was being worked pick and roll wise by Yusuf Nurkic. And this is the problem with Boban. Still has some borderline 12-team value. But there's going to be nights where he has, you know, 12 and 8 in 18 minutes. And people go, oh, per 36, monster. And then he plays 10 minutes or 4 minutes because he can't stay on the court. That's the risk. 36 minutes for Lou. Lou Williams, 20 points with 7 assists, getting back into the form we saw last season, while Beverly had 4, 3, and 4 in 35 minutes, so increased playing time for Bev there. On the Blazers, Nurkic fouled out in 23 minutes, but still had 16 and 9 with 3 blocks. Lillard had 25 and McCollum had 23, while the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu, 11 and 8 with 2 threes, a steal, and a block. Should I play it again? Yeah, let's go.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
That's a solid enough performance from Aminu. I think he's more of a 14-team league player rather than a 12-team guy. Not a lot else happening here. Still no Mo Harkless. Evan Turner, the nice assists, steals, and blocks, they're okay, and that's why he is that stream guy. While Zach Collins got 27 minutes because of Nurkic's foul problems, 10 and 9. You don't need to be holding Zach Collins in 12-team leagues. For as much as I like him, you don't need to do that. The Milwaukee Bucks, big winners over the Golden State Warriors, so minutes were down all across the board. The Bledsoe Panickers, this is regression to the mean in a massive way. 26 with 6 assists on 83% shooting. Still, the steals aren't coming, but it's why, again, I recommend holding him or buying really low. He does have a good record against the Warriors and turned it on here. Giannis had 24 and 9 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. Middleton was good. Brogdon was solid with 20 points and 3 assists as well. And Pat, according to Reggie Miller, Pat Connaughton had 15 points. I think all of those came in one quarter. 21 minutes for Connaughton, 4 rebounds and 2 assists. You're really settling into that solid enough role, but nothing massive to see from him in the long term. Lopez struggled, and he was always going to struggle against the Warriors, so I wouldn't be, you know, chalking this one up to too much. We had a lot more Ilyasova who played well. On to the Warriors. Quinn Cook had 15 points in his 19 minutes. I talked about him already. He's a guy that you go and grab. 5 assists for Cookie as well. Well, Jordy Bell started for Draymond. There's some short-term value for him and Looney. 4 and 5, 3 assists, a steal, and a block for Bell. Looney had 8 and 5 with a block, replacing Draymond, those two guys. So Bell's the guy that you add for that one game, but this is not a long-term injury for Draymond, thankfully. Also got 23 minutes out of Damo Jones with those other centers playing more at point forward. We just don't know exactly what Steve Kerr is going to do.
But you can call me Coach Steve.
All right, Coach Steve, with those rotations. So you know, Bell's fine for now, but it's really, really low upside sort of stuff. Alfonso McKinney, the wheels fell off with the shooting there, but still played the 20 minutes and 7 points and 5 rebounds. Really do like him as that deeper league guy, but this was a considerable ass kicking, as I'm sure most people can tell just by looking at that final score. Let's transition into some DFS talk now. Perfect lineup on DraftKings. Devin Booker, 60.25. Eric Bledsoe, 41.5. Paulie George, 56.75. Tony Warren Jr., 44.75. Steve Adams, 42.5. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 28.25. The Table Montrezl Harrell, 37. And Kyrie, 66.25. For a total of 377.25. And that cost $49,300. On FanDuel, Kyrie 65.4 actually. Gilgeous-Alexander 27.6. Devin Booker 58.1. Brogo had 31.1. Paulie George 58.2. Warren had 44.9. Marcus Morris 29.1. The Table Montrezl Harrell 40.2. And Steven Adams 42 for a total of 396.6. And that cost $58,900. Let's talk about these games. We're going to be focusing more on FanDuel pricing. 7-game Friday, the Charlotte Hornets against the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers off their first road win of the season. Go back home now where they're undefeated. 5.5-point favorites, and the total is 225 points. Point guards. Landry Shamet, 3,600. He's been playing okay, but I don't think there's really enough upside there to look at him. While Simmons at 9,700 has got a very good record against Charlotte, averages 52 points against them. It makes sense when you look at who they're trying to guard him with. If it's Kemba, are they going to throw Malik Monk on him? No. Jeremy Lamb, Nick Batum, Marvin Williams. I think Simmons has got really a 50-point upside here, pretty clearly. As for Walker, 8,600. Kemba's been putting up strong numbers, getting you about 40, 41 a night. Is that quite enough at 8,600? I'm not sure that it's there, but I still think that his floor makes him a rosterable guy, especially in cash. Redick at 5,200 has not been good lately, averaging under 20 over the last five, but I do think that he can come back here and get you a 25 or 26-pointer. Fultz is an ignore guy to me, while Monk and Jez Lamb, 45 for Monk, 48 for Lamb. I don't have any trust in those guys' ceiling or even floor. Kid Gilchrist is at 3,800, no interest there. Miles Bridges, Bob Cove. I like Covington at 6,600. He has put up some pretty significant numbers against Charlotte in the past, and I think Terry provided me with a nice stat there over at Playoutline Pro. Yeah, 15 games against Charlotte. He is 3 points and one rebound per game above his average, with a true shooting of 3 percentage points higher in his matchups against the Hornets. I think that makes him an interesting play, no doubt about it. I like his price at 6,600 as well. So Covington is in play. Batum at 6,000 is maybe just a bit overpriced. Power forward Šarić, 5,200, a slight price adjustment for him. I think that he is worth looking at that salary. I'm not buying that the shot is 100% back, but at 5,200, that is some value on FanDuel. Marvin Williams coming off a strong game as well, but I'm definitely not buying that. And then at center, Joel Embiid, 11,000. He is giving you big numbers nearly every night. 52 average over the last five. Let's go for another 50 odd here for Embiid. Hernan Gomez and Zella, I don't really think are worth much of a look. On DraftKings, I love Covington. I like Šarić at 5,000. Covington at 54. Embiid at 11,200. They're probably my three strongest picks here. Kemba Walker at 9,400. I think on DraftKings is significantly overpriced. Let's go on to the next game. The Washington Wizards and the Orlando Magic. The Wizards are favored by 2.5. The total is 218.5 points here. John Isaac is out for the Magic, so a bigger boost to Terry Ross. A start for Wesawundu as well. Point guards. DJ Augustin has been putting up some okay numbers lately. Him and Jaron Grant manning the point for the Magic. 4,800 for Deej and 42 for Jaron. I think the 48 for DJ Augustin is worthwhile. He's averaging 27 over the last three. there is an element of risk. He's not the safest guy, but there is something there for him. While Johnny Wall comes in at 9,900. Is that too high? Probably. 54 points last time out for John was solid. You feel okay about his floor. The numbers are coming, but I think that might be just a bit too high for Johnny. Terry Ross at 48, I like. He's getting you 22, 23 nearly every night when with Isaac out, hitting his shots, you know, hitting threes, getting some steals. He's worth looking at. Brad Beal at 8,500, I also think is a solid floor shooting guard. Fournier also in some strong form. He is at 6,900.
Giggity!
Well, he's beating that value, averaging 38 over the last three. I'm not fully ready to go in with Fournier here. Small forwards, Oubre, John Simmons, Otto Porter. Otto Porter broke out of his slump and they've adjusted his price up to 6,600. That turns me off using Otto Porter, so I'll leave that alone. And then at power forward, Markieff Morris is at 4,900. That's a pretty good fade to me with Dwight back and Aaron Gordon up at 7,900. I actually don't mind Gordo at 7,900. He has struggled against the Wizards in the past. But a nice little run at the moment, 40-point average over his last three games after a bit of a slump. He's in the mix without being the greatest option. I like Dwight Howard. He's also at 6,900.
Giggity!
I'm certain that Dwight Howard would love the fact that he is 6,900 as well. He has done well against the Magic in the past, 39-point average over the last three, four. Yeah, I think that was mainly for Charlotte last season, but even as members of Charlotte last season, Atlanta the year before that. He's done well against Orlando. Vooch at 8,600, I think, is not someone I'm all that interested in here. That price just feels too high. And Mo Bamba is probably not going to get it done for you in most DFS lineups. On DraftKings, I like Dwight, I like Porter, I like Beal, Wall, Gordon, and Vooch at 8,100 on DraftKings is an interesting GPP guy. Terrence Ross at 47 is strong, but there are just better options on DraftKings as opposed to how it sits over on the old FanDuel. Let's go on to the next one, the Pistons and the Atlanta Hawks. The Pistons are favored by 4.5 points. The total is 225. Sorry, the Pistons are favored by 5 points. Anyone going up against the Hawks recently have been putting up some really strong numbers. So this bodes well for that Pistons front court of Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond. Kevin Huerta missed last game for personal reasons. We don't know if he's going to be ready to go. So if he is out, it gives a boost to Kent Bazemore. It gives a boost to DeAndre Bembry also. Reggie Jackson at point guard, 5,800, has done well against the Hawks in the past, is struggling at the moment. I think he's worthwhile in a tournament because, you know, the Trae Young defense, you can put up some pretty big numbers against him. As for Young at 7,400, he's getting you 35 a night, which is strong, and I think that's okay at 7,400. Not the best bet on the board, but there's some value there. While Ish Smith's at 5,100, I think that's probably a little bit high for a guy whose upside's pretty low. Reggie Bullock's down to 4,200. He has done nothing the last couple of games as he recovers from his ankle injury. I'm not interested in a low upside guy like him. Bazemore at 6,800 is playing all right, but not to that level. And then you've got Langston Galloway, who's at 3,900. Absolutely worth a look because for some reason he's getting 25 minutes a night, getting you 25 fantasy points. So that would be worthwhile, but he could very easily just disappear back to 12 minutes as Bullock pushes back to 30. So there's a risk there. Small forward is formerly known as Taurean Prince, 6,600. He started the second half last game. His roster percentage is going to be low as people are off him. I'm ready to get back on to Taurean Prince. Bembry's at 49, and if Huerta plays, I'd fade that. Glennie Robinson at 37 is only for tournaments. He will likely start, and Stan Johnson, and no thanks. I love Blake. 9,800 for Blake Griffin. This has got 50-point potential written all over it against this Atlanta team. And then you've got him matching up against the Wizard, Omari Spellman, who dropped just a casual 48 last game. He is at 4,200, and he will start at power forward. I've got every confidence that he will start at power forward. They'll let him get out there, get his lumps in, but in games where he wasn't going bananas, he'd play like 21 minutes, and when he was, he played 28. So there is an element of risk there with Spellman. His floor is not really all that high. He was worth considering as a tournament guy, especially given how low that price is. The centers for the Hawks, foul trouble could become a real issue for Alex Len and for the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman. Dedman's got a good record against the Pistons, 30 average over the last three. I'd look to throw him in at $500 less into a tournament over Len, but I don't feel super confident about either. While Drummond at 10-2, that's a big price, but he is just getting 20-20 games like they're going out of fashion, and he has a real chance to put up a dominating performance against this Atlanta Hawk team. Let's look at it over on DraftKings. Prince, Bazemore, Griffin, Drummond all look pretty strong, as does Trey Young. Reggie Bullock down at 3,900 would give you an element of appeal for a tournament-type setting. The next game we look at, the Indiana Pacers and the Miami Heat. There's no spread or total currently released for this one. Dwayne Wade and Derek Jones are both listed as out on the game notes, while Goran Dragic, the iron shoulder, is questionable with that knee injury. So if we're going to have Wade and Jones out and Dragic out, we're going to have to load up on the Duke, Wayne Ellington, Tyler Johnson, Justice Winslow, Joshie Richardson, and Scooter Magruder. They're all going to be playing really, really big minutes in this game, so there's some significant value potential here for this Heat team. For the point guards, we want to take a look at Daz Collison at 46. No. Goran Dragic at 6,400. I wouldn't want to use him with this knee thing up in the air anyway, so that's a no. Corey Joseph, no. What? Tyler Johnson at 47. That's one we can look at. It would be a great tournament play if we don't know the status of Dragic. And of course, if Dragic is out, it's pretty strong in cash as well. Maybe not the best one, but still pretty strong. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, 3,800. He dropped 30 last game. I'm happy to go back in with him. I don't think Dragic will play. And even if he does play, you've still got Wade that is out as well as Derek Jones. So Ellington can come in. He can splash in 21 or so FanDuel points and be a useful option. Scooter Magruder's at 49. Not quite living up to that level that he'd been at earlier in the season as the shooting has dropped off. But minutes could be coming in big, big chunks for Magruder. So I think he's worth looking at. While Oladipo at 9,000. Really excellent game from him last time. 68 points for Oladipo. He's averaging almost 50 over the last five. He's really tough to ignore in what looks like a very, very good matchup for him. Love Joshie Richardson at 76. Love Justice Winslow at 56. I think there's, you know, really high odds that both of those guys exceed that value. Tyreek at 44, really good odds that he doesn't. And Boyan at 4,400 is always a tournament guy, but probably not a strong one. Domantas Sabonis, who was the subject of my player spotlight, which you can go check out on YouTube, and it will release as a podcast tomorrow as well, which you can hear that there. 6,500 for Sabonis. He is averaging 33 over the last five. He feels absolutely rock solid at the moment. Now, centers have struggled a little bit with the Heat, so that's something to bear in mind for Sabonis, and that 6,500 doesn't give you a huge amount of wiggle room, so he's not in my must-play type of guys. But this, of course, you have to look at how well he's been playing. Thaddeus Young's at 54. Excellent record against the Heat, averages 39 the last three times out against Miami. That is definitely something to pay attention to. But I'm not sure it's looking superb for Thad here, who was a limited last game. Olynyk and Leaf, no way. At center, Miles Turner, an excellent record against Hassan Whiteside for whatever reason. 36 points in the last three games. He had troubled Whiteside in the past with Whiteside having to go out and guard at the three-point line. But Turner seems hesitant to take threes this season. So in a tournament, maybe his percentage would be real low. And I don't feel super confident. While Whiteside, I think everyone's going to jump, especially casuals are going to jump back on Whiteside. He's up to 9,100. He's coming off that nine-block game. He has had a really good record against the Pacers, though, so that's worth looking at. He has had some good games against Miles Turner, averaging 43, and at 9,100, 43 points is okay. So while it would seem like an automatic fade, given that the people will be on it in high bunches, the price has gone up and it's hard to replicate, the matchup actually can work in his favor, much like the matchup for Turner can work in his favor against Whiteside as well. So I think that there is something there, but I wouldn't say that he's my number one center option, but he's definitely not someone to completely avoid given the way that he has played against this team in the past. Over on DraftKings, I like the Duke, Wayne Ellington at 37, and Oladipo at 9,000 as well. Not much else really standing out. Richardson at 7,400, Winslow at 5,600. There's value in those guys as well, same as on FanDuel and Tyler Johnson. If we get Goran Dragic ruled out, he will provide a level of value there as well. The Brooklyn Nets at the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are favored by 9.5, and the total is 210.5. Will Jokic take a shot? That's a good question. Everything that I'm reading and seeing about Jokic is leaning in towards me thinking a big bounce back game is coming. So that's going to be it's going to be interesting to see whether he actually can do it against this Nets team. We're not sure about it, but it's been a six-game stretch of some really weird and confusing performances from Jokic. We just need him to obviously turn that around here. Just not sure if that's going to be the case. There are a couple of interesting stats that Terry dug up for me over on over at Player Line Pro regarding some of these Nuggets guys. I'm just going to bring that up now. One of those does actually involve Jokic. His last two games against Brooklyn, he has averaged 30, 13, and 4.5. It's a great bounce back opportunity for him. And Gaz Harris also averages an additional 4 points per game against against the Nets. So there is some opportunity here in this game for Denver against against Brooklyn. Let's talk point guards. The Blue Arrow is at 7,500. I think that might be a little bit high for Jamal Murray. Then you've got Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell. Russell coming off a 33-point game. When he plays well, I tend to fade the next game, and that's where we're at here. And that might mean throwing Dinwiddie in. Although Dinwiddie also played well last time out, 32 points at 5,300. I would take Dinwiddie over Russell. The shooting guards, Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
As I said, a good record against Brooklyn, averages 33 FanDuel points the last three times as well. Down to 6,800, I'm happy to go in with him. Caris LeVert up at 7,700. And for good reason, he's been exceeding that value, averaging 41 over the last three. I'm just not sure I'm comfortable throwing him in there at 7,700. Wancho's at 39 as a small forward. He's got 30-point upside. But that's, of course, exclusively for tournaments. Or Jumpin' Joe Harris at 43, probably not happening there. The power forwards, Rondé at 48. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to get 30-minute Rondé or 12-minute Rondé. There is, I think, limited upside and non-existent floor, so that's a strong fade. Paul Millsap at 56 is doing nothing, although his record against Brooklyn is excellent as well. 33-point average the last three times, down at 5,600. That screams out at you. But he has been struggling, and I think this ankle is bothering him more than he may let on. And at 5,000, if Millsap's ankle is bothering him, Trey Lyles is the guy. 34 points last time out. I think that he is absolutely in tournament pools. Jared Allen against Nikola Jokic, 6,400 for Allen, has been around 30 points most games. I don't think this is the greatest matchup. I like Jokic as a great bounce-back chance here. I'm not sure I'm willing to say he's a cash guy. But a 48 average the last three times against Denver, 9,300, a big price drop. I think he's worth it. And Mason Plumlee getting some significant minutes as a backup here if Jokic gets into foul trouble. A great matchup for both of these guys. 4,100 for Mason. He can be a 22-point guy. I think there is some value in Mason Plumlee. Let's look at this one over on DraftKings. Jokic, Dinwiddie, and Russell, I think, are all... Dinwiddie at 46 is a great price, and D'Angelo at 56 is pretty strong, and Jokic is that tournament upside guy at 9,200, and love Gaz Harris falling below $6,000 on DraftKings. Let's look at the Boston Celtics and the Utah Jazz. The Celtics, the only team on a back-to-back, likely no Kyrie. Jaylen Brown had a bang in the ribs, and he had ice on it. He looks to be okay, but there's a chance he may sit. It's a back-to-back in Utah at altitude. It doesn't look great for the Celtics. The Jazz are favored by 3. The total is 209 points, but that means some opportunities could open up for guys like Rozier and Marcus Smart. They're two of your better options on the day, I believe, given this opportunity that's likely arising. Rozier is at 6,200, a massive boost on FanDuel. They know that Kyrie is out, so you can't squeeze that value really out of him. Now, he still can be useful there and give you a nice, solid floor cash guy, but the must-playness of him on FanDuel just isn't there. Ravishing Rick Rubio is at 6,600. Just quietly, he's averaged 41 the last three times against Boston and coming off a 40-point game himself with a lot of assists and steals. I'm not sure I'm totally sold on him here. Shooting guard Don Mitchell, love it. 8,800 for the Don. A great chance here for him after 41 average over the last three to come out with another 40 point up. Really big on Don Mitchell. Jaylen Brown at 5,000, probably not with the injury. And Marcus Smart at 51 would be a nice tournament guy that hasn't suffered the same price increase that Rozier has. So there might be a little bit of value you can sneak in there. Jingle and Joe's down to 57 because he has been struggling. I'm ready to get back on. I think he turns it around here. Gordy Haywood against his former team. If you are a hashtag revenge game boy, you can go and look there. While Jay Crowder, hashtag revenge game boy as well, $5,000 for Crowder. I'd feel much more comfortable throwing Crowder into a GPP because I know he's going to play more than 25 minutes and he can get you 30 points. And I don't know if Haywood's quite at that level yet. Power forwards, Jason Tatum at 6,600, just absolutely stinking at the moment. So I'll leave him out of it. Marcus Morris at 5,100. The shots are going in. They continue to go in. 5,100 for Marcus is worth looking at more tournament than anything else. And Derek Favors really fueled by a big run on defensive stats. He's averaging 32 over the last three. At 5,300, that's great. I'm just not sure that that's sustainable. And against the Celtics, he might really struggle. So I think he's a pretty strong fade to me. Al Horford at 6,600, got the Gobert matchup, has done well against Gobert in the past. I think he is fine to use, and centers have had decent success against the Jazz and Gobert this season, especially those ones who can get out there and bang the three. So I think Horford's got some value there. As for Gobert, he has struggled mightily, only averages 23 points against Horford and the Celtics, so he is on my fade list here in this one. On DraftKings, Mitchell, Rozier, who's at 49, Mitchell's at 71, really, really strong plays, and Marcus Smart at 41 I like, as well as Al Horford at 6,200. Let's go on to the last game of the day, and we're looking at the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Sacramento Kings. Will General Saunders play Jimmy Butler? We don't know yet, so there's no spread. There's no total out at this point. For the point guards, we know that Jeff Teague is out.
My name is Jeff.
So Derrick Rose at 6,000 is an excellent, excellent option. De'Aaron Fox at 7,500. I feel pretty bloody good about what Fox is doing as well. So they are both strong cash guys. Tyus Jones, probably not. Shooting guard, Shumpert at 3,700. Bogdan Bogdanovich is out, sorry, as well for the Kings, resting as he returns. And Buddrick Hield at 74. I mean, on Buddrick at 74. I think that's value. Shumpert, probably not. And General Saunders himself, 9,500. If Butler is playing, I think that we can use him at 95 and feel pretty good about it. But who knows if he's actually going to get out there and suit up. 4,500 for Josh Okogie. If Butler is out, then yes, that would have some interesting cash sort of appeal. At small forward, Wiggins is at 6,700, and he is actually producing 34 average over the last five, and I would feel okay with using him if the general happens to sit this one out. Nemanja Bjelica has been dreadful. He is at 6,500. Not a large enough salary dip for me to say he's must roster, but if the game is close, I'm pretty confident he won't be as absolutely shitful as he was the last two, so I'd be okay with actually going back to Bjelica in this one, especially if Butler is out. I think the Kings could make this one, you know, pretty competitive and potentially even get the victory, and that would really help Bjelica's value. Marvin Bagley's at 49, always got that GPP type upside in case there is blowouts either way, and a really strong matchup for Bags, but I'm not sure that he's not a cash guy. Taj Gibson at 5,300, a lot of minutes lately. If that sticks, then he smashes 5,300, so worth looking at for sure. And then you got the centers. Will Cauley-Stein at 7,300, coming off a really big game. I think there's value there, and Townsie's at 96. Now, if the general's out, Towns is worth looking at. He averages 63 points the last three times against Sacramento. I was hesitant about thinking him as being a cash guy, and I still am, but if the general is sitting, then Towns does become a pretty good cash play, in my opinion. Over on DraftKings, we have got Fox, Hield, Cauley-Stein, and even Towns at 89. That's pretty hard to go past, I think. And then Bagley at 45 is more of your tournament guy. Derrick Rose is up at 6,800 on DraftKings, which is okay, but it falls away a little bit when you've got a great option like Terry Rozier over there at a much cheaper price. So yeah, him and Wiggins are both still options on DraftKings. He's probably not as attractive an option as what they are on FanDuel. Let's go through the studs and the values. On DraftKings, my stud is Towns at 8,900, and my value guy is Donovan Mitchell at 71. And for reference, I do a stud as over 8,000, and a value is under 8. That's how I look at it. My stud on FanDuel is Mitchell at 8,800, and my value is Derrick Rose at 6,000. The Yahoo stud is Townsie at $40, and the value is Terry Ross at minimum $10. On Moneyball, Don Mitchell, 8,900 is the stud, and the value play is Derrick Rose at 63. And on DraftStars, your stud is Ben Simmons at 16,270, and your value play is Terry Rozier at 7,350. The best bet of the day, I am taking the Jazz. Got the Celtics on that altitude back-to-back with no Kyrie. They are 3-point favorites. I am going with the Jazz here. Guys, that's a week done, but I'm going to be releasing the podcast tomorrow with the player spotlights of Miles Bridges and Domantas Sabonis on that, so check that out, listen to that one. Subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube, thumbs up, 5-star reviews, leave comments, you know all the drills. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Kyle Kuzma.